Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Agree with everything he says, and you'll get along fine. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Godfather of Soul gets us started this morning. The Toronto Raptors get a shot at a little bit of revenge against the Washington Wizards on Saturday. Of course, the Wizards eliminating the Raptors in the playoffs last year. This will be the first regular season meeting between the teams since the 2015 NBA playoffs. Raptors have a pretty good run of regular season success against the Wizards coming into this game. The Wizards will be playing tonight against Boston, so the Raps will get the Wiz in the second part of a back-to-back. It's a weekend where Toronto's teams will be facing Washington teams. In addition to the Raptors and Wizards, the Leafs will be hosting Alexander Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals at the Air Canada Center on Saturday night. Really much of a chance for revenge between the Capitals and the Leafs. But I think in a lot of ways, these two games against these teams from Washington are going to tell us something, are going to serve as measuring sticks for the two Toronto teams. I mean, I really believe one of the things you do when you're a good team, when you're a team like the Raptors, when you're a team that has expectations of going to the playoffs and perhaps going on a little bit of run in the playoffs, I really believe you do have to exact a little payback against teams every now and then. I think it's good for the soul. I think it's good for the fan base. I think it's good to help maybe expunge some of the memories of the postseason. It's not going to make any difference if you beat the Washington Wizards. It's not going to undo what was done in the playoffs. But I think through the course of a year, every team kind of puts notches in its belt, maybe subconsciously even. And I've got to think for the Raptors, you beat Oklahoma City this year. You wrapped up that tough West Coast trip with a couple of wins. You beat Cleveland at home. Now you go in or you have a chance to take care of the team that eliminated you from the playoffs last year. Maybe erase a bit of those memories. Be a big weekend for the Raptors. And for the Leafs? Well, we're still at that stage where we're charting the Leafs' progress shift by shift, period by period, game by game. Alexander Ovechkin's had their number for a while. Capitals are playing real good hockey right now. They're off to their second fastest start in franchise history. So this will be a measuring stick as well for the Leafs. The big weekend of Toronto sports, or I should say it's a big weekend of Toronto Washington sports. We'll get us started on the Jeff Blair Show.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
All right, it is a Washington weekend. And we just realized we sat down during our meeting, our prep, and we said, you know what we got to do? We got to play, some songs about Washington. Got to play songs by bands from Washington. What a crappy music scene that city has. It was staggering how bad it was. Like, seriously. Fugazi. Derek Brandeo, our technical director, says, better not have one. Like, seriously, man. I understand it's a government town and nothing much exciting ever happens in government towns, but holy mother of God. I mean, the city's like a bazillion years old, and Fugazi is the only thing you can come up with? Yeah, that's right. We looked. Bad Brains, do they count? I mean, I don't even know. Anyhow. So we figured we'd do the revenge angle with Mr. James Brown getting us started today. That is just shocking how bad the music scene is in Washington. I mean, honest to God, the closest we came up with, Dave Grohl was born in Virginia, and we had an argument. We had an argument about this with Travis and Derek and myself. I'm sorry, he was born in Ohio and he grew up in Virginia. So Travis was trying to, Travis McKenzie, my producer, was trying to suggest that that makes him a Washington, D.C., you know, rocker. And it doesn't. It really doesn't. Absolutely doesn't. Anyhow, I just, you know, every now and then you find stuff that just stuns you. Stephen Brunt's going to join us at 10 o'clock. That alone is stunning. So the fish are safe for another day because Brunt's going to be on at 10 o'clock. We'll be joined by Peter Drury, talk a little premiership. Jordy Mittelstadt will join us, talk a little NFL. And we'll have the usual baseball and hockey dialogue for you. Want to get started with Bob McGill of Leafs TV. The Leafs will play the Washington Capitals and they are, as I said, a team that we kind of joke that there's not a great deal going on with the Leafs. You know, there's not a great deal that kind of excites the soul, right? Both the Leafs, but we really do. At the same time, we've been saying this, and I know people get tired of hearing it, but I think it's true. It really is about trying to find progress with this team, and trying to find, I call them green shoots, which I know has become a horrible, horrible sports cliche, but trying to find those things that suggest that there really is, you know, this team really is on the right track. I mean, beyond the record. So we've been charting things like their improvement in special teams. We've been charting things like the individual improvement of players like Nazem Kadri, certainly James Reimer, who is expected to be back in net. And, you know, we kind of, the ongoing examination of Morgan Rielly's development as a player. And basically we've talked a lot about how we're trying to track basically a culture change, which can be really difficult. Doesn't always excite the fan base. I mean, fan bases do tend to measure progress in wins and losses, and that in terms of wins and losses, and that's thoroughly understandable. I mean, when you spend your money to go see a game, when you spend your money on swag, it's understandable that you would, you know, you would, the return in your investment is wins and losses. And I understand it gets a little old sort of looking at silver linings and looking for those particular green shoots. But I think we can say that we've seen a fair number of them. So here's what I want to do. We'll go to the phone lines of 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. And we'll just ask the question ahead of the Leafs and Capitals this weekend. What have you seen so far that suggests to you that the Leafs really are on the right track? Maybe it is the record. That's entirely possible. Maybe the record's enough for you. I think for most people, you need to see more than simply what the record is right now. You need to see signs of something. Really haven't had a chance to talk a great deal about that. I'm interested in what you've seen, and I'm interested in particular to hear from people who actually go to the games, Leafs fans who pay money. What are you seeing that suggests to you that progress is being made? And what are you most interested in following to reinforce the notion that progress is being made? 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. You can reach out on Twitter. Use the hashtag Blair Show. My Twitter handle is at SN Jeff Blair. Again, if you want to talk about the Raps, we can do that as well. Larry in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, Larry?
Hey, Jeff.
Howdy.
I guess my thought is I'm still confused about the Leafs. For weeks or months, we heard that in politically correct terms, they were going to tank. And the objective was to go to the bottom, get the high draft choices, and build from there. If Babcock, and I guess in any other context, he'd be doing a great job. If he gets them to the middle ground, what's the point?
Well, I mean, the first thing to keep in mind is it's a long season, and there's absolutely no guarantee that what we're seeing now will continue. The other thing to keep in mind as well is at the trade deadline, I don't think you're going to see this team make acquisitions to get it over the hump or to get it into the playoffs. You're going to see this team dispatch players.
Sorry, Jeff. My question would be, if you could have given all of that management team truth serum before the season and asked them, where do you want to be after 25 games, I think they'd want to be 1-24.
No, I really don't. I mean, I think that for both Lou Lamoriello and Mike Babcock, you know, I mean, they're here for a while, but I think their most important, I really believe this. I think the number one thing in their marching orders, the number one thing in their mindset was to try to change the culture around this team and try to get guys playing the way Mike Babcock wants them to play. And I mean, honest to God, I think that was their plan. I don't think it's got anything to do with the record. I think, frankly, they think the record will take care of itself. The main thing for me, this is when we'll really know. This is when we'll really know. As I said, if you get to the trade deadline and this team is on the cusp, right? And this team is just kind of flirting with the playoff possibility. If we see this team do something like make a trade to try to get into the playoffs or suddenly bring up William Nylander to kind of give them a push in the playoffs, then you can worry about it. But right now, I think you just have to kind of take what you're seeing at face value. I really do. And I like the fact that we've seen improvement from Nazem Kadri. We've seen continued growth from Morgan Rielly. I wouldn't say it flatlined last year, but I thought his growth kind of, it petered out a bit last year, shall we say. We're seeing that. I think you're seeing a lot of good things for next year and the year after that, which is when I need to see those good things. I really do. That's what I need to see this year. Would I be happy if they were 1-24 and Morgan Rielly wasn't developing and Jake Gardiner wasn't developing and Nazem Kadri looked the way he did last year? No, I'd be really unhappy.
But, Jeff, it doesn't need to be an either-or. What my concern is, you get a middle-of-the-pack team with a great culture, and we're there for another 20 years.
Well, with all due respect, I think that if Mike Babcock can get this team middle-of-the-pack, then I think if that happens, I think you've got to feel really good about this team, because that would indicate to me that their ETA might be pushed up by a year or two. But I don't think that's going to happen. But again, you can't coach your team to lose 24 of 25 games. You just can't. There are ways of managing what you do. There are ways of managing how your season turns out. And again, it gets back to the point. If you can get something, get draft picks for guys like Joffrey Lupul, I don't know, maybe a Roman Polak, maybe a Dion Phaneuf, maybe even a James Reimer, almost by as a result of that process, the team is going to be weakened. Like, I just, I can't sit here and look at the Leafs record and say, oh my God, here they go again. They're going to be middle of the pack. I just can't do that. I need to see growth from players that I'm going to count on in the future. Because I'll tell you what, if the Leafs finished last and did get the and ended up draft, if they ended up drafting first in the lottery and got Auston Matthews and brought Auston Matthews into a situation where Nazem Kadri didn't do anything all year, Morgan Rielly hadn't developed, Dion Phaneuf was still around. You know what I'm saying? If you brought him into a team that was horrible after what happened last year, you know, you're bringing a guy into a bad environment. I don't know if you want to do that. I really don't. I mean, I think you can't control, and I'm sure Mike Babcock would say, you can't control the lottery balls. I mean, Buffalo Sabres, now granted, Jack Eichel's not a bad booby prize. Buffalo Sabres did what you want the Leafs to do this year. And it didn't work out entirely the way they wanted because everybody wanted Connor McDavid. There's no guarantee. John in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, forgive me for saying this, but I have no, I really, just get back to me when they're winning. I'm semi-encouraged this year by what I hear. I won't watch them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm encouraged that they're for the first time in since 1967.
Why won't you watch them, by the way?
Because I have no interest. I've been down this road before.
Okay.
I'm 67 years old, and I've heard. But this, what it does encourage me is that they are actually seem to have a plan, and they're not working entirely on whimsy. Or they get a plan and they get all whimsical and go, we got to trade everybody and get some lump. I think if things go to course, there's a good chance that in 3 or 4 years you're going to have a team here. But I have no patience of watching it now. Life's too short.
All right, I appreciate the call. Wow. Like I said, I've said this often. This is a fan base that's had the delusion beaten out of it. It really has. It's the most realistic fan base in sports. And I know you probably get tired of me saying this, but I'll say it time and again. The biggest surprise for me in doing this show, by far, has been how realistic and how non-delusional the Leafs fan base is. I mean, that Leafs fan base has seen it all. They're not going to fall for anything this time. Matt in Kitchener, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, Matt?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Couple things. The last caller, he should be watching. Life is too short, and this is actually a team that works hard. He's been watching a team that, you know, threw in the towel 10 games in for the last 15 years. This is the 1 year he should be watching. Second thing, I actually called because the caller 2 calls ago, I'm glad you kind of put your foot on his throat and cut him off, because I don't ever remember Babcock or anybody coming forward and going, we're going to tank, we're going to finish 1-81, we're going to pick first for the next 3 years and then rebuild. That was never the conversation. The conversation in this city from day one was culture change, a system in place to bring up young players and bring them into a system that works. As far as I'm concerned, if Babcock was the coach here 3, 4, 5 years ago, this team would have had a lot more success. The team's had talent. It hasn't been coached well. It mm-hmm. hasn't been run well from the top down. And I think that's what people are missing. It's not necessarily, I know the players are responsible. But let's face it, this team has had a lot more talent and played a lot worse in the past 2 years than it is right now. And I think that's a positive. If Babcock can get a bunch of dummies, as everybody apparently thinks they are, to play well, what's he going to do when they do get a couple of young players like Nylander and these types of guys up? I think this is a positive. I think people should stop being so pessimistic. Everybody was bitching and moaning about Shanahan to do something. Now he's done it, folks. You're in for the long run. Take a deep breath. Watch the way these guys are playing.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are playing so much better than they were. I mean, I said to my old man at the start of the year, I hope they lose 82 games this year, 5-4. That's what I'm hoping for, because of course I want the first pick. I also want to watch entertaining hockey.
Yep.
And for the first time in a very long time, I can watch a Maple Leaf game and feel like I'm getting that. And that's Babcock. That's the system, and that's the system that they're putting in place.
You know, Matt, I think what you're saying is that for the first time in a while, you can see a means to an end.
Yes.
You know,
there is actually a change going on, and everybody is so tied up with, like, I mean, I'm sorry, but if Carlisle was coaching this team, where are they?
Yeah.
Right? They're guaranteed you're going to be getting that first overall pick. They had a ton more talent with Carlisle a couple of years ago, and they were still a bottom of the league team. So people need to take a deep breath and realize you don't need Connor McDavid if you've got a coach in a system that Babcock's putting in place. You don't need a Connor McDavid to win a Stanley Cup. Would it help? Sure. But if you've got a decent group of talented players who play by a system, that's how you win. Sidney Crosby has won one cup. Everybody still says he's the best player in hockey this year, maybe not. But Pittsburgh's tried to build around a single player with a lousy coaching staff over the past few years. It hasn't worked. You need talent throughout, and you need a system that works. And I think Babcock's implementing that.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Matt. And again, there's no guarantee you're going to get Austin Matthews. I mean, there just isn't. Look, the Buffalo Sabres are just damn lucky that the door number two was a pretty good door. I mean, Jack Eichel, when it comes to consolation prizes, is pretty damn good.
That's a pretty good silver ribbon.
Exactly. It really is a good consolation prize. But, you know, there's no indication this year that the number two guy is of the same caliber as Jack Eichel. And there's no indication, there's no guarantee that the Leafs get Austin Matthews. Again, for them to finish in the very bottom of the NHL, to me, that would indicate that you haven't seen culture change. It would indicate that you haven't seen growth from people like Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner. With all due respect to Leafs fans, even if you got Austin Matthews next year, and even if you bring William Nylander here, you're still going to need 23 other players to have a pretty good team.
To put a team in the ice. You can't teach a losing culture.
Exactly.
And the thing is Babcock's really starting to put in place the factors that are going to push. This is the way the Leafs play hockey. This is the way the Marlies play hockey. This is the way the Leaf organization does it.
Yep.
And they're going to be able to pick and prod and go, Lupo, you're doing it. Joe Blow, you're not. And they're going to go through and they're going to pick their pieces that they want. They're going to move forward. And I think you're going to see a lot of these guys that maybe, like, Matthias and these types of guys that people aren't really focused on right now as being kind of the older core players, I think they're going to be a lot of the guys who stick around because they've come into a culture where Babcock coaches and they play the way he wants. And you don't need to be the most talented guy on the ice to play well if you're playing in a decent system.
Appreciate the call, Matt.
Thank you, sir.
Matt, the voice of reason. I think, anyhow, the voice of reason. Jorge Castillo is a Wizards beat writer for the Washington Post. The Raptors will play the Wizards tomorrow night at the Verizon Center. That game will be on Sportsnet 1. Sunday's game against the Suns will also be on Sportsnet 1 as well as on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Jorge Castillo will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Brady and Walker, this afternoon at 1. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So it seems as if Matt and Kitchener got some people thinking on Twitter. Now this is from Tom Pastore at MLSE.com. Matt and the Fan at 9:24 a.m. today summed up TML perfectly. Culture change and growth. Matt, if you want, Tom Pastore's Twitter handle is tom.pastore at MLSE.com. Maybe get a hold of him. Seriously, I think more people have kind of hooked themselves on the Matt's way of thinking. And you know why I think that is? I think it's because people have actually seen that it's working. It's like anything else. If Mike Babcock had come in and said, you know, we're going to enact culture change around the Toronto Maple Leafs, and this is going to be your record after 20 games, or this is going to be your record after 25 games, people might look at it a little differently. But I think people have taken Mike Babcock and Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello at their word. And especially the smart fans among them, they've taken them at their word, and they said, okay, show me. Show me some evidence. Give me some evidence that stuff really is changing. Well, the team works harder than last year's team. That's obvious. I mean, you've got to be, you have to be, you'd be guilty of being an absolute liar if you tried to argue against the idea that this team is working harder. This team is obviously working harder. And as I said, there have been growth in areas I've need to see growth. Special teams. You know, you try to, part of creating a culture, part of creating a winning culture is creating a winning system to play special teams. And the Leafs have done that. And again, the players that you need to get better, the players that you think can provide the core or be part of the core for this team when they're going to be playing meaningful hockey, almost to a man, they're playing better. Almost to a man, they're working harder. Some of them aren't getting the results. But you know what? This is the first time anybody has been able to look me in the face and say, you know what? Nazem Kadri, the pucks are going to eventually start going in for him. He's going to start getting rewarded. It's the first time somebody's been able to say that to me, and I've been able to go, okay, yeah, I can see that because of the way he's playing. If you told me that last year, I would have said, it's not going to happen. I mean, he can barely keep his coach happy. The hell's he going to get chances to score goals? So, I mean, that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. And I think a lot of Leafs fans have their own, their own mental checklist, what they need to see, right? And I would be willing to bet that if you put like 10 Leafs fans in the room with 10 different mental checklists, 10 different things that they consider to be the most important thing they're looking for this year, I would be willing to bet that 8 of them, 7 of them would be able to say, yep, the first thing I was looking for is being met. And the, Saturday will be a good test for these guys. Oh, Alexander Ovechkin always plays well against the Leafs. He usually plays well against the Leafs. He usually likes to put on a show on Saturday night and Hockey Night in Canada. He'll get his chance. Let's see how these guys can handle a team with one of the league's true superstars on it. While the Leafs are playing the Washington Capitals here, the Toronto Raptors will be attempting to take care of business at the Verizon Center on Saturday. We'll have that game on Sportsnet 1. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock. It is, of course, the first game between these two teams since the Washington Wizards eliminated the Toronto Raptors from the playoffs last year. Surprising elimination from the Raptors' point of view. I don't know if NBA teams are wired for payback necessarily. I mean, it's such a long season. I tend to think the concept of payback matters more in the NFL where the season is shorter. As I said, it's such a long NBA season. But I do know that when you talk to guys, they'll tell you that there are different games during the year that constitute a notch in the belt. There are different games during the course of the year where winning just feels a little better than it might otherwise. Now, for the Raptors beating Oklahoma City in Oklahoma, that was one of them. Taking care of Cleveland at the Air Canada Center on Wednesday, that surely had to be one of them. And I'd be willing to bet that for the Raptors, beating the Wizards in Washington in their first meeting of this year, it would probably constitute a notch in the belt. Jorge Castillo covers the Washington Wizards for the Washington Post. Jorge Castillo joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jorge, thanks so much for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So do you think the Wizards will view this game similarly to the way the Raptors might view it? Or are the Wizards right now sort of, you know, they've got their own things they need to take care of. They're 6-6. Randy Whitman he's kind of called them out, hasn't he? In some ways, do they have their own things they have to worry about right now?
Yeah, I don't think they're viewing this in any ways, like the Raptors are. You know, the Raptors, obviously, the way they were swept last season, I'm sure they're viewing it as a chance to kind of for some revenge in a way. Mm-hmm. The Wizards are, you know, they've lost two games in a row by double figures. They just scored 6 points in the fourth quarter against the Hornets on Wednesday night. They got Boston tonight, and tomorrow when they play the Toronto back in D.C., it's going to be the fourth of four games in five nights. So they're just trying to get through the toughest stretch of the season, one of the toughest stretches of the season for them. You know, next Tuesday they got Cleveland. So for them, it's more about just trying to fix their problems.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of blame is being dealt around, whether it's Randy Whitman to the players, John Wall questioned a coaching decision he made the other night. Marcin Gortat and Randy Whitman's relationship right now is pretty icy. There's a lot of things going on this team right now that had highest aspirations going into the season.
Yeah, my sense about the Wizards going into the year was that based on the personnel moves they made, based on some of the decisions they made, that essentially what they were saying to me, again, from a distance, Jorge, is, you know, we're going to live and die with Bradley Beal and John Wall. You know, this will work because of the way the NBA, we've all talked about this, the way the NBA is being played now. There's less of an emphasis and sort of dumping the ball into the big guy in the middle and having him thrash his way to the hoop. It's more of an outside game. It's more and more a guard-driven game. So I kind of saw the logic. I kind of saw the logic in what the Wizards were doing. Do you think maybe they've invested too much responsibility or too much offensive responsibility in Beal and Wall and maybe not giving themselves that kind of other dimension that you do need?
Well, I think that could be an answer. But I think what's happening early on is they're trying to figure out exactly how this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything's going to, you know, be 100% great from the beginning of the season, especially when you change so much as everything that they did. They got Chris Humphrey starting right now at power forward, and he's shooting three-pointers, and the guy has made two three-pointers before the season in his entire career, 11 seasons. He's not a perimeter player, offensively or defensively. So whenever, you know, a team closes out on him on the three-point line and he has to make a decision to pass the ball, shoot over him, or dribble and attack the basket, he's having trouble deciding that, which has made him ineffective. But the other end, he's had a guard, you know, C.J. Miles and mm-hmm. other stretch fours and across the NBA, and that's difficult for him. So I think that's part of it, trying to figure that out. Bradley Beal was hurt for three games with a left shoulder injury, so he couldn't really, after he was averaging 23 points a game and really got it going. So that didn't help out. John Wall, and also just John Wall is just not playing well right now. I mean, he'll be the first to tell you. He's averaging 4.5 turnovers a game, shooting 41% from the field. Seems like sometimes he's just not into it, whether it's body language. And he said that himself. He's talked to his teammates. He said he needs to be a better leader. He needs to, when his offensive game isn't working out, defensively, he has to step it up. He views himself as one of the two, you know, one of the best two-way point guards in the NBA, and he needs to start playing like he is, because it made sense when the Wizards decided, hey, we're gonna ride with John Wall and Bradley Beal. They're two of the best guards in the league. That's their strength.
Well, and they tore those guards tore apart the Raptors in the playoffs, and you know, and Atlanta. I mean, I would have, quite frankly, after what I saw in the postseason, Jorge, I would have done the same thing, I think.
Right, and basically in the postseason, what happened was Nene was starting at power forward with Gortat, but as soon as that starting lineup went out, Nene and Gortat basically never saw a floor together until the third quarter when they started the second half together. So mm-hmm. they were basically playing with a quote-unquote stretch four, either Paul Pierce or Drew Gooden at the four, and Nene and Gortat not playing together. So that's kind of what they just viewed that as the success that they had in the playoffs, and they thought, all right, let's try to make this work over the course of the season. I think early on, I'm a little surprised that they haven't gone big as much as they I thought they were going to go big a little more using Nene and Gortat sometimes in games just to change up the look a little bit. But they stuck to this, you know, small ball lineup using Jared Dudley off the bench at the four. And it's just been somewhat of a difficult transition. The turnovers have been up. Defensively, they haven't been as good this season. That's the biggest problem. They just haven't been – they've been a top 10 defense the last 3 years, and they're allowing over 100 points left and right. So basically, you know, any team that can come in and score 115 points, 120 points on them, and that's a problem.
Yeah, as you point out about Chris Humphreys too, I didn't realize this, but before this season – he was 2 of 26 from three-point range. Through 12 games, he's taken 40 shots. He's 15 of 40 from beyond the arc. So this really is a team. It's a team in offensive transition, isn't it? And as a result of that, its defense has suffered.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing these guys are saying. Like, okay, the offense, they're going to be problems. You know, we're kind of transitioning into this new thing. They're going to be kinks we have to work out. But defensively is where these guys, the last three seasons, even when they didn't make the playoffs three seasons ago, they were still a top 10 defense. And last year they were fifth in the NBA in defensive efficiency. So these guys are saying we need to get back to that. When they've allowed, when they've held teams to under 100 points this season, they're 5-0. When they don't, they're not winning games. I mean, they're 1-6. So they need to figure that out defensively. They simplified the scheme a little bit to kind of make it easier to communicate and make these guys make less decisions out on the floor. It helped out for a couple games, but now the last two games, again, the Pacers had 123 points, and that was partly due to the fact that Paul George and T.J. Miles just went off, you know, 40 points, 32 points, respectively. And then the other night, you know, 25-0 run by the Charlotte Hornets in the fourth quarter as the offense just kind of disappeared, and they were kind of blowing out there in the fourth quarter.
How much of you made an interesting point earlier about the relationship between Marcin Gortat and Randy Whitman being icy and John Wall at least questioning some of Whitman's moves. What is it about Randy? Even last year when that team was playing well, there was kind of a sense that Randy was not a bad fit for the team. Again, they beat Toronto and Atlanta, so I mean clearly what he was saying and what he was preaching was working, but you got the sense that there wasn't total buy-in from a lot of guys in that team. What is it about Randy's personality or Randy's tactics or strategy or whatever that has kind of created that sense that something may not be right?
Well I think last season that was maybe a little blown out of proportion by some people the way I thought these guys bought in. Most of the guys,
okay,
most of the players on the team bought in to Randy Whitman.
And in fairness, you know, Randy Whitman doesn't do a great job of selling himself in the press all the time, does he?
No, that's another matter. But when it comes to the guys in the locker room, you'd ask the guys last season when they were losing 12 or 15 games in the second half at the All-Star break or around the All-Star break before and after. They were buying in. Mm-hmm. Randy Whitman preaches defense. They kept preaching it. You know, offense was kind of, you know, they had a low ceiling at times. They couldn't produce offensively as much, but you know, defensively they were great, and that's what Randy Whitman just preached. You know, just play defense, and we'll be in games. And they were fine with it. They were cool with it. And eventually, they swept the Raptors. They went to six games with the Hawks, despite John Wall breaking his hand. And you know, there were a lot of good vibes coming out of that. Now this season's a little different. Randy called out Marcin Gortat in the media for getting one defensive rebound in 27 minutes against the Thunder. Gortat said he didn't appreciate it. He said that Randy Whitman wouldn't have said he wasn't going to do that in training camp, you know, calling people out in the media. Randy questioned their body language, their mental toughness the other night. John Wall said he thought that he should have started the fourth quarter. Him or Bradley Beal should have started the fourth quarter Wednesday when they scored, you know, 6 points in that fourth quarter, even though when him and Bradley went back into the game, they were still routed. I think it was 21-0 runs from then on. So there's just a lot of, you know, kind of pointing a little bit. There's mm-hmm. some pointing going on. I don't want to say it's, you know, everyone's just blaming each other and it's kind of like turmoil. It's like, not like that, but there's frustration. This team is 6-6 and they're expecting themselves to win 50 games. And at this rate, they're not going to be close to winning 50 games. So I just think there's a lot of frustration going on right now. 4 games in 5 nights, you know. The other night they had Indiana, they got Charlotte, you know, Toronto, Boston, Cleveland. This is a tough stretch, and they know it. So I think they're feeling the pressure a little bit, and it's early in the season, but you have to turn things around if you want to reach these goals that you set.
Jorge, it was great of you to do this. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
It's Jorge Castillo. He covers the Wizards for the Washington Post. Does a terrific job. You can follow him on Twitter at Jorge C. Castillo. And again, the Raptors will be in Washington tomorrow night to play the Wizards. And Paul Jones will join Stephen Brunt and myself at 11 o'clock to get you set for that game. And Duke Ellington appears to be the guy that everybody says is probably the longest, like the best of the DC musicians. Pretty damn good, you might say. But I think that alone points to what we were talking about, the music. Duke Ellington, Fugazi. It's a gap. I would call it a gap. Stephen Brunt will join me. We'll have some football talk in the next hour. This is going to be a lot of fun. Ray Ratto, you know him. He's a senior insider. I don't know what a senior insider is. I guess it's an insider who's old for CSN Bay Area. he got a great assignment. He's in Winnipeg for the Grey Cup. And basically the idea is with San Francisco hosting the Super Bowl, Ray convinced his editors, or they convinced Ray, or somebody convinced somebody, that it would be a good idea to see how the other half lives. So they dispatched Ray Ratto to Winnipeg. Now, if you know Ray Ratto, and if you listen to this station, this show, or Primetime Sports, you probably have a pretty good sense of what he's about. Ray Ratto in Winnipeg seems like an odd match. In a good way. In a good way. So Ray Ratto is going to join Stephen Brunt and myself. He'll tell us how much he likes my hometown. I'll ask him if he's, you know, had a genie cake yet. And that's nothing silly. It's a cake. It's a local delicacy. So when I say genie cake, don't go in the gutter. And then Tim McAuliffe, who used to host Tim and Sid. I still does. And is a play-by-play voice of the 2015 ArcelorMittal Vanier Cup, which is presented by Pro Mutual Assurance, and which we're showing on Sportsnet. And that's the last time I'm going to say ArcelorMittal Vanier Cup presented by Pro Mutual Assurance, because that really has screw-up potential written all over it. Anyhow, Tim McAuliffe will join Brunt and myself, Paul Jones, and then Peter Drury, one of our play-by-play voices, the Barclays Premier League telecast. He'll be along as well. So we'll have a lot of fun ahead in the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.